Good morning and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals here on September 10th. This is the second oral argument of today via zoom.gov. The basic rules of the court when we are physically in the courthouse are the same as we're using here on zoom.gov. So each of you will have 15 minutes for argument. Ms. Torgerson, you'll have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal if you want to use it. I would ask you both to open your remarks by introducing yourself, since we are taping these arguments and they'll be available. And you'll notice that our marshal will have a clock up, so you'll be able to keep track of the time during your argument. If you have any technological difficulties, let us know and we'll try and stop and address those as best we can. So with that, counsel for appellant, whenever you're ready. Oh, and wait, hold on. I did not put the name and caption of the case. I apologize. I usually have the marshals do this. This is State of Minnesota versus Nathan Hatch, A20-0176. And with that, counsel for appellant. I think, Ms. Ferguson, you're going to have to unmute yourself. There you go. If you could begin.
Good morning, Your Honor. Lynn Torgerson, representing appellant Nathan Hatch.
You may proceed with your 15
minutes. Oh, I apologize. I thought we were supposed to both introduce ourselves and then go forward.
I'm sorry if I wasn't clear.
Okay.
I just wanted you to do that at the beginning of your argument, which we will start now.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Lynn Torgerson. I'm the lawyer representing appellant Nathan Hatch. May it please the court and counsel. Mr. Hatch is a veteran, a Marine. He served overseas, has been honorably discharged, and he's a law-abiding citizen of the United States of America. He has taken this appeal and has challenged the constitutionality of the carry permit requirement statute. And just to clarify for the record, he's challenging that both facially and as applied. I wanted to begin just by making note. Recently, I received a Lady Justice statue from the National Trial Lawyers Association. And I noticed that she was blindfolded. And so I think it's important to remember why she's blindfolded. And that's because justice is supposed to be blind. Cases are supposed to be decided on their merits, on the law, and the United States Constitution. They're not supposed to be decided because of political beliefs or on particular ways people want the outcome to be. And so justice is supposed to be blind. What we have herein is Mr. Nathan Hatch. He's a young man, recently married, just had his first baby, who was a boy. He has served his country. I think it's important to note he's not, he hasn't been charged with felon in possession of a firearm. He hasn't been charged with carrying under the influence of alcohol or drugs. In this case, he was simply engaging in pure Second Amendment behavior by carrying a firearm. And on this particular day, he was on his way to work. He had the misfortune, appears is due to a lack of funds, that his car broke down on the way to work. And as a and what shortly happened is that an officer approached, and he has now been convicted of criminal behavior, has a permanent criminal record. This statute provides for up to 365 days incarceration and up to a $3,000 fine and labeling a person a criminal. Criminal convictions also cause employment problems and thereby financial problems. This is wrong. As Justice Scalia has noted in Heller versus District of Columbia, United States Supreme Court case, United States citizens are born with the rights to keep and bear arms. Keep means to possess, bear means to carry. So essentially we're born with the right to possess and carry around firearms. I think it's also important to note that this is the Second Amendment, coming just after the First Amendment in the Bill of Rights. And so it was obviously fundamental to the founding fathers and the founding of the United States of America. And it reflects that it was uppermost in the mind of our founding fathers. And on this particular day, all Mr. Hatch was doing was carrying a firearm. He had it in the back of his vehicle in a backpack, and he was exhibiting pure constitutional behavior. And the statute criminalizes this fundamental right. The statute has made pure constitutional behavior a gross misdemeanor and or a felony. And just to, as an aside, then if the next one for Mr. Hatch would be a felony under this statute. And Your Honors, this is wrong. This violates the Second Amendment, and the criminal penalty portion of this statute must be struck down as unconstitutional. The Second Amendment.
Counsel, if I may. I had a question which related to your argument about this being a fundamental right. And I think one of the issues here is what's the level of constitutional scrutiny that we use? Is it strict scrutiny, or is it, you know, some intermediate level of scrutiny?
Thank you, Your Honor.
And I understand, because here comes the question part. Okay. And I read most of your brief to say, look, it's a fundamental right, so we use strict scrutiny. But in footnote 15 of your brief, you also note that the legislature declared that this statute is subject to the strict scrutiny test. And I just wanted to ask you about it. Maybe you're like, don't worry about that. Just go with my, you know, main argument. Because I, just speaking for myself, not for the panel, would question whether the legislature can tell the courts how to do a constitutional analysis. I know the legislature can certainly say, here is our government interest, and we believe it's compelling, but that's different than saying, and here, courts, is how you ought to analyze the Constitution. So could you just address that for me?
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. The Second Amendment unequivocally is a fundamental right, and all black letter law, all the case law states that when a statute infringes upon a fundamental right, that statute is subject to strict scrutiny. A statute which infringes upon a fundamental right are subject to strict scrutiny, and that's the way it actually should be. I think there are some cases that trying to essentially, perhaps aren't very friendly to the Second Amendment, try and maneuver their way around that standard. But for a fundamental right, the black letter law is and always has been that any statute touching upon a fundamental right is subject to strict scrutiny. And in addition, as the court Your Honor, is mentioned in section 624.714 subdivision 22, the legislature declared that the review of their statutes should be reviewed under strict scrutiny. And I think the legislature was just recognizing that their legislation touched upon the Second Amendment and recognized that it's a fundamental right and that that is the appropriate level of scrutiny for these statutes. Whether or not, you know, a legislature can declare that, I really, I guess that is a, I don't have the answer to that question today, and perhaps that would be better in a different case. But herein, under the strict scrutiny standard, the challenged legislation must be narrowly tailored to serve a compelling state interest. And the case law states that the burden of proof is on the government to show that no alternative means available that would involve a lesser infringement is available. Under a strict scrutiny analysis, the statute has to use the least burdensome means and the statute must be drawn with precision. Herein, this statute is not drawn with the precision of perhaps a scalpel. Rather, it's the legislature has essentially used an improper sledgehammer. And that sledgehammer is a gross misdemeanor or felony criminal penalties. And with all due respect, that's overkill. And it's for merely engaging in pure constitutional behavior. Now, the purpose, obviously, of this statute is for safety. And essentially, all that's required is a one-day class. I think they usually take about 8 hours. Now, in the usual arguments regarding, you know, public safety and things like that, really don't apply so much to this type of case because we already have laws barring felons from possessing or carrying firearms. We already have laws prohibiting people convicted of a misdemeanor crime of domestic violence. So this statute actually is addressed to law-abiding citizens. So, Your Honors, in this type of case, at most, what should be imposed is something like a civil penalty, perhaps of $100, something like that, for carrying without first obtaining a permit from the state. It is overkill and to impose severe criminal punishment with a permanent criminal record for engaging in essentially Second Amendment behavior. This statute is not narrowly tailored, and it certainly is not the least burdensome means available to achieve public safety, and it fails.
Counsel, if I may, because sure. When I read your brief, I read it to say you were asking the court to strike down the statute on the grounds that the statute is unconstitutional. And now I seem to hear you saying, but tell me if I'm wrong, or just narrow it to say, well, there are no criminal penalties. I mean, is that a fair characterization of your position?
Well, it's not the appellant's position that they, you know, that it's improper to require a class or something like that. And usually statutes and various provisions are analyzed and sometimes just the unconstitutional portion is struck down. Herein, the offending portion is the criminal penalties. If those can be severed and just strike that portion down, you know, that would be the appropriate remedy. I'm not sure that that's possible, because then there would be no remedy for, you know, not obtaining a permit. So perhaps the entire statute has to fail. But the most offending portion is the imposition of gross misdemeanor and felony provisions, Your Honor. And, you know, I guess it does appear that, you know, the entire statute would be struck down, and then the legislature would have to, you know, reenact portions with a different remedy for essentially carrying without a permit. It hasn't been Mr. Hatch's position that the states, you know, that a government can impose any limits on constitutional rights. And of course, that's not an accurate statement of the law anyway. We also wanted to address, Your Honor, if I can find the cases. I apologize. State versus Craig is not applicable to this case. That case involved a felon in possession who challenged the constitutionality of that statute. Peruta versus County of San Diego is not applicable herein. First, it's a Ninth Circuit case. It's not controlling in the state of Minnesota. And in that case, it actually analyzed English law, which was overruled. And I guess I will end there. I am out of time. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. You'll have some additional time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Chris Renz. I represent the Metropolitan Airports Commission in this matter. As Your Honors are aware, there's one question. It's whether Minnesota Statute 624.714 Subdivision 1A is unconstitutional as a violation of the Second Amendment. The answer is it's not. There are at least three reasons for this. First, the requirements in that statute are within recognized limitations of the Second Amendment. Second, the statute satisfies the applicable intermediate scrutiny test. And third, it is poor public policy to strike down this statute and, frankly, others, as would be the result with the breadth of the Second Amendment for which the appellant advocates. For all these reasons, we're asking that this court affirm the district court.
Mr. Renz, let's start with the standard of scrutiny that we apply to follow up on Judge Jessen's question to Ms. Torgerson, because the statute does say that the provisions of this section are declared to be necessary to accomplish compelling state interest in regulation of those rights and should be construed that way. That sounds like strict scrutiny to me, according to the legislature. How do you respond to that?
Thank you, Your Honor. My primary response is that the legislature, with all due respect, does not get to tell the courts how to apply scrutiny tests for constitutionality. That is the courts to determine, and the legislature otherwise could make all sorts of things constitutional or unconstitutional by their very doing. That just doesn't make any sense. Secondly, I see the section that you are pointing out in subdivision 22. And frankly, I think the only way it makes sense to interpret is that if there is vagueness regarding one of the provisions in the statute, that it is to be applied strictly. But it doesn't seem to make any sense to say, well, this all should come under a strict scrutiny standard at the same time we're putting this very law in place. I mean, if the idea of appellant's position is, well, the legislature wanted to set it up to make it really hard for this to be a law, it makes no sense for them to do that in the same breath make the law. So I don't think that's what's intended, first of all. I think the intention is that It's simply that if there is some kind of question as to the statute, that it is narrowly construed. And I also just don't think that the legislature can tell the judicial branch what to do.
Mr. Renz, if I could follow up on these questions about the level of scrutiny, as I stated during my questions with appellant's counsel, I mean, I have some concerns, as you gathered, about the legislature's ability to tell us how to do constitutional analysis. But I also noted, when you're talking about intermediate scrutiny, in your brief, you cited to all these cases from outside of Minnesota. And yet in the Williams case here, the Minnesota Supreme Court, and I admit this is dicta, it said the Minnesota Citizens Personal Protection Act must be examined under the compelling state interest test. So, I mean, that's the Supreme Court. We're the Court of Appeals. Why don't we have to follow that?
Thank you, Your Honor. I don't know the Williams case that you're pointing me to, so I can't specifically speak to it. I would, however, point the court to the State versus Craig decision, which is also a Minnesota Supreme Court decision. Though it didn't end up applying a level of analysis, this court did in the appellate court in 2011 in a published decision and said quite clearly that this was to be done under an intermediate scrutiny test.
Mr. Renz, I read the Supreme Court's decision in Craig, which I have here, as saying, well, we're vacating. We're that part of the Court of Appeals decision because we're not reaching that issue. Isn't that a fair reading of that decision?
Yeah. So what we're left with is the published Court of Appeals decision in Craig, which does say intermediate scrutiny. I also think that there are two wholly separate reasons, Your Honor, that an intermediate level of scrutiny is appropriate. First is the looking at all the other courts that really have interpreted this, and I specifically would point you to the Third Circuit in the Marzarella decision. They go through a very detailed analysis of this, and they talk about the fact that strict scrutiny is appropriate where possession of firearms is severely limited, something like a blanket ban, as was the case in the Heller decision. But a lower level of scrutiny is appropriate where there's not a blanket ban, but a limitation, quote, more accurately characterized as a regulation of the manner in which persons may lawfully exercise their Second Amendment rights, unquote. And that is exactly what's happening here. This isn't a blanket ban. It is merely a regulation on the manner in which you do that. You merely have to go, as Ms. Torgerson said, take a one-day class, and they check to make sure you're 21 and not a felon, and then the sheriff shall give you a permit. Here, there's no blanket ban. People like appellant, they are entitled to possess and carry handguns exercising their Second Amendment right. They just need to apply and receive a permit. Therefore, it's intermediate scrutiny. Secondly, there's a logical issue with the strict scrutiny standard in light of the Heller decision. And this court in Craig, in the Court of Appeals decision, cites to a couple of law review articles that get into this. And that is this: if strict scrutiny was to be applied, then Heller doesn't make any sense. And the reason that you can't have the two in the same place is that the Heller court made a number of identified exceptions, as well as saying that isn't an exclusive list. But in the identified exceptions are, for example, felons in possession. Well, that would never pass a strict scrutiny standard, because there are lots of felons in possession that are white collar criminals or other people that aren't inherently dangerous. And so by the very recognition of an exception that would never pass a strict scrutiny standard, the United States Supreme Court in the original Heller decision has already made it clear that you wouldn't apply a strict scrutiny standard. That, in addition to the logic in Marzarella and what Craig had to say in this Court of Appeals, are all reasons that I don't think that a strict scrutiny application is appropriate in this case. Unless there are more questions about that. So once we're at intermediate scrutiny, as the court's well aware, the question is it substantially related to an important governmental objective? There are compelling state interests. Subdivision 22 of the statute talks about that. There are plenty of decisions, and everyone realizes that there is a huge, large issue with gun violence in this country, and the government's objective to protect the health and safety of its citizenry is the very first thing that is stated in the Minnesota Constitution. The statute here says that permits are to be granted with the mere training, 21 years old, you aren't a prohibited person, and you're not in a criminal gang. Those are basic, and they ensure those carrying handguns out in public, you can do what you want in your house, but if you're out in public with it, have to meet basic precepts. And I would...
Mr. Rins, can I go back just a little bit? I've been struggling with some of our questions and answers earlier. I mean, you stated that, as a reason for saying there should be an intermediate level of scrutiny, that under, you pointed the Heller decision, correct me if I'm wrong, and said, well, the felon in possession exception, which is carved out there, would not have survived a strict scrutiny standard. Correct, so that's what you said?
Quoting that law review article, I think there is a logical inconsistency.
So is it your position, would you say then that this law that's being challenged here would fail under a strict scrutiny analysis? The same as you alluded to that the felon in possession exception would fail. I just want to make sure I'm clear.
I don't think that this would fail under a strict scrutiny standard, Your Honor. The strict scrutiny, there is a compelling government interest. It's noted both in the statute as well as the number of decisions I just talked about and the known problem of gun violence in this country. And it is, in fact, the opposing counsel wants to say there are no alternative means is the question. And what she points out is it's fine if there's a civil restriction, but it's the problem is that there's a criminal restriction. And that is not an accurate analysis, respectfully, under the strict scrutiny standard. It's the same level of restriction. That is, whether it's a civil or criminal outcome, the restriction is you have to go get a permit. So it's the same level of restriction in either case. And so if appellant's position is it would be fine if it was just civil, and that would be narrowly tailored, then it can't be that the same restriction, just because there's a different consequence when you violate it, is somehow not narrowly tailored. This is in fact narrowly tailored. It has very basic requirements, and frankly, they are directly linked to the government interest. I quote Judge Posner in the Moore Seventh Circuit decision, some states sensibly require that an applicant for a handgun permit establish his competence in handling firearms. A person who carries a gun in public but is not well trained in the use of firearms is a menace to himself and others, unquote. This meets the strict scrutiny standard. I just don't think that the court ever needs to get to strict scrutiny, because I think intermediate scrutiny is appropriate for a number of different reasons that I've outlined. Your Honors, just a couple more points. One, this is within recognized limitations of the Second Amendment, and I don't want to go through all of it, but I remind the court that Heller was very clear that the right to possess a handgun is not unlimited. It does not extend to any weapon whatsoever in any manner whatsoever and for whatever purpose. And they specifically find in both Heller and in Craig that legislators can regulate their use. That's what's been done here. I'd also, Your Honors, outline the fact that if you read through appellant's brief in the collective to understand the public policy at risk, you see that appellant's position is that the right to bear arms is a God-given right, it's page 13, that includes the right to any weapon that enemies of the government possess, footnote 11, or that our government possesses, footnote 14, and is a right possessed by every person, even the young, that's in 23, to be used if a person is, quote, damaging windshield wipers, unquote, in front of a person's house. My point is the court should avoid adopting appellant's version of the Second Amendment. It is unbridled, and it would leave the government powerless to serve its most basic job, which is preserving the health and safety of its citizenry. For all these reasons, Your Honors, we would ask that this court affirm the district court and uphold the constitutionality of Minnesota Statute 624.714, Subdivision 1A.
Thank you, Mr. Rins. Ms. Torgerson, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Ms. Torgerson, before you begin, I just want to clarify something that you started your argument with. You said that you were challenging the constitutionality of the statute both facially and as applied. And I just, when I read your brief through the it seems like you were just challenging it facially. I didn't see that you addressed the as applied argument, and I just went back to skim through it again. And could you please point to your brief where you analyzed as applied?
Your Honor, I believe the facts and the law show that we've never limited it to facially.
You're going to have to be a little more specific with regard to your analysis for me, because when I read it was as applied. There were broad statements about how the statute is unconstitutional.
Correct. Both it's unconstitutional facially and as applied to Mr. Hatch himself. And
I'm just not seeing that in your analysis, the as applied.
Well, I think the facts and the law as set forth both in the trial court and in our appellate brief address both the facially and as applied. I mean, clearly we're arguing as it is applied to Mr. Hatch as well as facially. I would like to briefly go back to the statute, subdivision 22. The legislature did declare that when enacting these statutes, that upon review, the courts are to use a strict scrutiny standard. So I do think, and I do believe that the legislature can do that when it promulgates its own laws. It can say this is how courts should review these laws that we're enacting, and we're recognizing the importance of the Second Amendment. And secondly, the Minnesota Supreme Court in Craig specifically and explicitly said that it did not decide the level of scrutiny, and the Minnesota Supreme Court opinion completely supersedes the prior Minnesota Court of Appeals decision, which is nullified by the issuance of the Minnesota Supreme Court decision in Craig. Heller does not state that the level of scrutiny is supposed to be intermediate scrutiny. The state has cited absolutely no governing authority to support the application of an intermediate standard in this case. And that is actually contradicted by United States Supreme Court case law, Minnesota Supreme Court case law, and the statute itself. All three state that this is a fundamental right and that it's supposed to be evaluated under a strict scrutiny analysis. The gun violence arguments raised by the state have absolutely no application to this case. This case did not involve any gun violence. It involves pure constitutionally protected behavior. The state raised an argument that, you know, we're just supposed to look at the level of restriction. That is an absolute misdirection. The statute must be read in its entirety. And that includes the requirement of a permit, and the failure to obtain a permit subjects the person to a very severe criminal penalty of a gross misdemeanor or felony. And we're not saying that a civil penalty would pass constitutional scrutiny. We're saying that this statute violates the Second Amendment. We're not here proposing new legislation. And I believe I am running out of time. Thank you, Your Honors.
Well, thank you both very much for the helpful arguments. We will take the matter under advisement and issue a decision within 90 days. And this ends.